I'm Aaron Cathy, and it's day 23,000 of quarantine. And this is Creatives in Quarantine, a podcast about what people in advertising are doing while locked up during these place a horrifying adjective here times. Took a nice week off from podcasting. I keep wondering whether I'll ever get to shut this thing down or have to call it something else because we're all finally out of quarantine, but by all appearances, we might be doing this for a while. It's like the perfect time to dust off that guitar and learn how to play something. Which brings me to Bill Bain. Bill is a group creative director at GSD&M in Austin, but he's also a massive music fan. He's in a band called The Cold Irons, and during quarantine, he started an Instagram live show called Teach That Guy a Lesson, where he takes live streamed guitar lessons from some of his musical friends and heroes. People like Johnny Fritz and Ken Bethea of the old 97s. It's a show he's used to not only learn how to be a better guitarist, but also to raise money for charities. You can catch Teach That Guy a Lesson every Thursday, and particularly this Thursday with the Philly punk band Beach Slang. You can find that and Bill's past shows on Instagram at Bain 16th State. That's Bain 16, the number, TH State. So this is me talking to Bill Bain in quarantine. All right, Bill, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Aaron. Glad to be here.
So I like to start off every interview. It's a question that I think is taboo during quarantine times, since we're all sort of still in quarantine times. So you're in Texas and everyone's kind of reopening a little bit. But how's your quarantine been?
It's been good because it's provided some unique things, opportunities with my, I have two sons. So our family, my wife lives obviously still here with us. Parts of it have been really great, and then parts of it just heartbreaking, surreal, sort of a mixed bag, I guess, of things. I mean, everything from I've got like a freshman and a sixth grader, and so you know, I work normally or I travel, and they're always at school. So there's been, I probably have made more lunches for them and sat down to have lunch with them the last 3 months than I have. Maybe their whole lives, maybe not. I mean, it's a lot of Saturday, Sunday lunches when work's normal. So that's been a really lovely thing. There's been a lot more family time, and it's one of those things where I love them. They love me. But during March Madness, my wife installed a basketball goal in our living room, and they had March Madness inside the house. And then we went through a catalog of movies. And then we did like a luncheon lyrics every day at lunch at the said lunches, where I would sit down and we would study some music or the lyrics of musicians that I admire, or I thought were sort of timely given the situation we're all going through. And that was good. It felt like until school was in. And so from sort of March to end of May, beginning of June, there was a lot more, it was more regimented for us. And so since summer's hit, as I told them, guys, y'all were doing maybe 3 hours of schoolwork a day, even in March, but that's a sidebar. It's been more challenging since school's out because Now they feel it's summer, but yet we can't go anywhere and really do anything for the most part, or not like we normally. And so it's just been challenging. I have one's a basketball player, one's a swimmer. And so there's no swim team. There's no regular basketball. So it's just, there's a lot of time concentrated here that presents its own beautiful yet challenging moments.
I can't imagine being a parent right now dealing. I mean, it's been pretty stressful for me during quarantine here by my girlfriend and I, but and we have no kids, but like, I can't imagine, you know, having two boys running around constantly, you know, and trying to get your job done at the same time. That's kind of a wild
experience. It has been, and just trying to, my youngest one, I think he watched something inappropriately or someone told him something, because in the first days of COVID, when everyone's, you know, getting in fist fights at the grocery store kind of thing, he was convinced that we have two dogs, but if even if the mailman would come or someone like a door-to-door salesman or someone to deliver something that he didn't recognize, my youngest was convinced that someone was trying to break in our house and harm us and steal our food.
Yeah.
He thought that's where he was. And so that was really, I mean, it sounds like, come on, don't be cockamamie, but
yes. Yeah.
And then, so that's been hard. And also it just feels like with these, just the murder of George Floyd and the fallout from that and the sort of the protest and everything that's sort of befallen since then, that's presented its own set of circumstances and conversations that I want probably already should have had, but are having, but that presents it with especially there for a while there when it was just violence, so much violence and emotion, raw emotion. That's hard for an 11-year-old kid to be exposed to.
Yeah.
A little bit, I think, on especially the way they present it on TV, where it's just the same, like George, the murder over and over again. And we try to keep it from him, but then again, he's always in the house. And so it's just a very challenging set of circumstances, just a really unique kind of time for, and I really just hate it for all kids. It's like, it feels like, you only get so many years to be a true kid and a child of have elements of your childhood, and so obviously it doesn't speak to the murder and all the terrible just atrocities that have happened even since then, but it's just it's localized for me, and that's part of what, you know, I feel responsible for them, so just trying to figure all this out and be sane and responsible and respectful and reverent and keep going.
Yep. That's all you can do, man. That's pretty much. You're a writer, you're a GSDNM. Give a little background about who you are, how you got to where you are, and what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, I started in the business at BBDO in Atlanta, and I was working on airlines. I was a late bloomer, still am a late bloomer, but in the ad biz, and had a good opportunity at BBDO in Atlanta. We had Delta Airlines at the time, and I worked on it for about a year or so. Never in my mind did I ever put it together that, you have category experience. That could be really valuable to another brand and another agency and another place. And so my first real job was at BBDO in Atlanta, but then that was it after about a year of actually sort of writing full page newspaper ads that we used to do. It was basically bashing Southwest Airlines. I got the opportunity to go. I think I was like a little bit of a pawn in the game of GSDNM said, hey, you know those derogatory little smart ass ads that they were running about us in Salt Lake City. Well, they won't be doing that anymore because we hired the team that was doing all that. So they hired my partner now, Michael Anderson. He's at McGarry Jesse now, but he here in Austin. But they hired us and we worked on Southwest for a while, and then over the course of time, I got married or fell in love, got married, and my wife's pregnant. And so just needed a change. And so we went to LA and spent the majority of my time at Ruben Poster at RPA and then came back to GSDNM. I've been back a number of years now, almost 9 years now. But I worked on at RPA, we had a lot of Acura and Honda, and then a little bit of UCLA athletics. And then coming back, I've worked a lot on Southwest. I've worked on Goodyear, Hilton, working on a little bit of Jack Lynx right now. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag of things. Primarily, I mean, Goodyear has been the thing that we've been able to sort of turn them from a very rational tire brand and help them or help the branding go from being really rational to more emotional space, telling stories, whether it's through college football or the Cleveland Cavaliers or with Dale Earnhardt Jr. in NASCAR. So it's been a really very rewarding experience. Great people. And got to have some shameless plug on it. Goodyear's the official tire of NASCAR. And so we got to do a spot. NASCAR was the first sport to come back. And so we did a spot. We thought, wouldn't it be great if Dale Jr. was the voice? Like, well, yeah, but how's that going to happen? So we out the agency and Goodyear, our client. And so it was probably a month ago when it came back, but I was sitting in this chair. This is in my bedroom. I was directing Dale Jr. on a Zoom call to be the voiceover of the NASCAR spot that ran on the first race back. So that was kind of a fun bit. So that's kind of where I am. And that's sort of I talk too much anyway. That was the short version.
Man, I think, are you terrified? So do you ever get over being terrified when you're working with talent like that?
Yes.
Like, I worked with Sam Elliott on some spots not too long ago. And like, he's a nice guy, but so frightening to direct somebody like that, you know?
Well, yeah, Dale's, and I mean, Dale couldn't be any nicer. And we've had the benefit of working with him. We've partnered with them in Goodyear for like 5 years. And so there is a familiarity there, but still that this was like a new set of circumstances where it looked, his background was slightly tidier than yours, but not much. I think he had his hat on backwards and headphones. And so it was really funny because he's there at home. So he actually recorded, he was on Zoom, but he was recording in GarageBand. And so he was sort of doing his own mix because he's pretty savvy with all that stuff. He does a lot of podcasts and such. And so, and for him, it's like, a couple of years ago, we did a spot where I had to present it to him. And so the spot opens and just saying, okay, this spot opens about 35 years ago. It's you, Dale, as a 7-year-old. And so presenting that to someone about their life, I'm going to try to tell a little bit about his origin story in a 60-second spot. It's just surreal. It's just like one, it's one that's, but I think if you can, I don't know, I still process those things. I feel like, oh, I really did that. And we worked through that. And now we're here on the other side of it, but it's very rewarding. And things turn out, and he just got named, I was really happy for him. He's got named to the NASCAR Hall of Fame this week. So just working with a Hall of Famer, like you said, it's just, I feel like I need to pinch myself sometimes, like how I'm able to get in these opportunities.
It's worth the super late nights and the really long hours and the weekends and stuff like that when you get those opportunities to do that. So outside of advertising though, you're a giant music fan.
I am.
Which has kind of spurned this Teach That Guy a Lesson, this show. Talk a little bit about, talk about your relationship with music at first, and then, we can talk about Teach That Guy a Lesson and when you started doing it, when you came up with that idea.
Yeah. Well, I'm from Memphis originally, and that's my hometown. And Memphis is just, it's difficult to live in that city and not be influenced by the just incredible richness of the musical culture. And knowing that, and my parents weren't Memphians, but where I went to high school, we were very close or in the circle of friends who you had people who, their parents were either part of that moment. And so, so I had like my dad's sort of peers, but then those Memphis legends, my dad was a newspaper reporter. And so he wrote a really great, when Jerry Lee Lewis died, almost died. He's alive. Sorry. He's still alive. Jesus. Can't believe I said that.
He'll be fine.
Yeah. He's tough. My dad, Jerry Lee always thought like, that he always got the bad press, and like Johnny Cash and Elvis always got good press. So he was really pleased with what my dad had done for him. And so he wanted to pay my dad back. My dad's like old school journalist or reporter, not a journalist. And so he obviously wouldn't take any, the story in my mind is like Jerry Lee wanted to buy my dad a Rolex or something for my dad doing his job. So my dad's, he's not that way. He's old school and righteous. And so, but Jerry Lee found out through a friend of theirs, an intermediary, that my dad had two sons. And so we were invited to go to Jerry Lee's. We could go fishing at Jerry Lee's house. So we went fishing at Jerry Lee Lewis's house a few times. It's crazy. And then just being in Memphis is music. And so it's a huge part of my life. And then getting to be in Austin as well with Austin City Limits. And there's so many amazing bands here and artists here and so many incredible shows. If it's not, the band's not from here, they want to play in Austin. And so I'm just a huge music fan, and live music is a huge part of my life. I play in a band. That's why the reason I'm trying to get better is because I have a band called I'm in a band called the Cold Irons, and we're all ad guys. But we love playing music, and between being a creative director and a husband and a dad and a basketball coach, and I got a lot of jobs, as we all do, but trying to get better at my instrument is really something, being a better songwriter and something I try to do. And the little slivers of time, which I'm allowed, given how busy we all are. And so I started playing. So there's a great musician here called Robert Ellis, and his record, I recommend it to everyone, Texas Piano Man. He's a piano player, but really he's a really killer guitar player too. And so I learned out through a friend that he gave lessons. I think Robert's mom used to be a music instructor. And so I've been taking a little bit of lessons from him, and it's always good to take lessons from new people. I feel like you get comfortable with one guy, and they sort of figure each other out. And it's like, you know, you get maybe a little bit better, but it's really hard to stay committed. So with Robert, he's really challenging. He's like so accomplished, and he really pushed me, and I got better at certain things. And so he's just a very good teacher. Mm-hmm. And so when all this went down with COVID, I was due for a lesson. And so I was about to get a lesson. And then when all of his shows were canceled and South By was canceled, he kind of was he's very difficult to get. He's always on the road. So it's difficult to get in touch with. But when all the shows were canceled, he was calling me like, "Hey, you sure you don't want a lesson? Let's get a lesson." So, we were able to figure it out. And then everything was just like, I felt like, you know, everything was on fire and everything was so frantic all day. So in sort of a quiet moment, I thought, well, yeah, we'll do it. I said, but I got to give credit to another songwriter or he's from Memphis, a friend of mine. He was doing this show. His name's Corey Brandon. He's an awesome songwriter. And he was doing this show about songwriting. So once all the shows canceled, whether he's doing it on Instagram Live, and somebody would just do he had Amanda Shires and Jason Iswell and different folks on there. And I saw that sort of format. And then I sort of put that with the lessons I had. I said, well, what if I did this lesson thing? And so I'll pay for the lesson like I sort of always do, but we'll stream it and see if we can raise some money for charity or with so many people hurting. So that's what we did. And so I was sort of shocked that Robert said yes. I mean, and so he said, absolutely. I'll fucking do it. When do you want to do it? And so when I got Robert in the boat, so to speak, I got probably three or four more right then. And I'm like, this is going to be a little thing. So we've been raising money for the first few episodes. We raised money for HAM, which is a really great health alliance for awesome musicians, and provides mental health support, but also benefits and food and healthcare for working awesome musicians. Great charity. And these times they've really been helpful for musicians who don't have live shows to help support their livelihoods.
Do people give through the live?
Yeah. The Instagram set. What? I don't think it was even there. Can you hear my dogs?
Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Okay, cool. You can hear, it started, I think Instagram's like evolved slightly over this time with so many charities, so many things going on. So at the beginning of the stream, I dictate where it goes. And so that was going pretty good, and I was enjoying it and enjoying the lessons and having different people, you know, ask comments, and I'm started trying to get better at it. And so a couple of weeks ago, in the wake of the George Floyd murder and the fallout from that, just felt like to be on felt insensitive and just a little self-aggrandizing in a time when it's not about me. So we halted it. Then when we come back, I had Ken Bethea from the old 97s. Part of that was when I was thinking about it, but I wasn't quite sure. And so talking to some friends, we landed on the Equal Justice Initiative as a place to give, where they're really about, you know, fighting. That's my thing. And they're about this too. I've seen them write about it where the whole subject of Black Lives Matter, like, shouldn't be a political thing. It should just be like
a thing, like equality. A fact.
It's a thing. It's not what side are you on? It's like, no, we're all on the same side. We need to be more.
Yeah. How is this even a debate?
Exactly. So we've been doing that, and it's been great. And it's been great. And so some of my friends, I've been able to use some talented folks to help me do the posters, like their show posters. And some of them, I'm like, these are fucking badass. Like, I'm so proud of letting my friends get to showcase some of their talent and just try to bring some level of just some goodness. I mean, I was reading, I don't know if you saw it tonight, but Jeff Tweedy wrote this really great piece. And what we're trying to do, I think it's very sincere. It's insufficient for what's needed, but I'm trying to do what little bit I can in addition to all the other things, like trying to bring some goodness, some light, but also raise some awareness and also some money at the same time.
How are you getting connected? You know, you said when you started it, Ken from Old 97s, like that's a well-known band, you know. How are you getting these guys to do this?
I know. Well, like some mean people at GS, like I'm a big music fan. So I've been lucky enough to sort of like have some, like I know, like Robert is just honestly through, he was giving me lessons. And then the second one was Will Johnson, who's from Centromatic, and he Will and I are friends through Austin friends. And then Shiny Ribs, his wife, I mean, I've known Kevin for 20 years off and on, but his wife sits, when we used to sit together in an agency at GSCNM, Kevin's wife, Robin, works at the agency. Yeah. So, some of these ways I'd ask Robin, like, hey, can I get Kevin's private email? I need to ask him a question. And so actually, ironically enough, Jeff Neely, one of the managers, he works someone in the Old 97s organization after the first or second one, that was the most flattering one, because to your point, I mean, Old 97s are fucking legends, they're killer, yeah. Right? And someone from their organization reached out and said, hey, this looks like, and I know Jeff who did it, but they reached out to me, and that was like so flattering, like, oh my god, people are actually, they've seen this outside the guys in my band and the people I work with. So that's how I was able to get Ken. And yeah. Then I did, and it's other thing too, it's just like, it can't be any more DIY. Like the reason, like I've tried to put them all up on YouTube, and eventually they will all be up on YouTube. The problem is I'm working with my 15-year-old as the editor, and the 11-year-old, or the 12-year-old rather, is the master of ceremonies. He does sort of the intro. So it's meant to be very DIY.
That's awesome.
But I was trying to include them in the creative a little bit. And then, there's a really killer Austin guitar company called Collins Guitars, Collins, Collins. I mean, they make super high-end instruments. And we had done a couple years ago, GSNM, for the last 9 years, we've had these really just banging South by Southwest parties on the Monday of South By. And so one year we had Collins came and did an exhibit. We put up some of their the beautiful handmade instruments. And we probably put 10 or 15 on display. So we had a little bit of a relationship there. And so I was talking to a good buddy of mine, Ryan Madison. He's a manager here in town. He manages Black Pumas and a bunch of other, Whitney from Chicago, a bunch of killer bands. And Ryan's really helped me through some of the, I'll say business. There's no business here, but some of the business side of it. And so he really thought, he suggested like, oh, have you thought about reaching out to Collins to see if they would want to, to like sponsor the show? And by sponsor, he meant like give me a loaner to use, but it's a killer. I mean, I don't really own an instrument as nice as the ones they gave me. So Steve out at Collins, like, that sounds like a great idea. We'd love to be involved. So it's one of those things, those magical things of, it's only magic because you decided to ask someone to do it and they said yes, right? Yeah. And so there's been some of my friends that, a couple people, I won't name them, but I love them, but they're like, yeah, it sounds like a really cool idea, but I'm not going to go on your show, or it's not for me. I don't really want to give lessons, but all the people so far who have appeared, I'm a fan of their bands. I have records or multiple records by, like my friend Scott Miller, who's in the band, great band from Knoxville called the V-Roys. The fact that he came on, we raised a little bit of money and we spent a little bit of time together, but he's a genuinely one of my, he's a really great dude and a great friend. And so just to be able to talk to him, it was like, it's also been very, there's been that side of it as well, of just like, because I feel like for me anyway, I haven't really been able to move out of this Zoom world we live in. Most of the time I spend on Zoom, it's talking about ads and looking at decks and going through decks. And the most common thing of, I'll put the link in the chat. Like we're always on Microsoft Teams, and it's like, so just to be on like FaceTime or Instagram Live, but with my friends, just to talk about music and have them show me a trick or a way to do a hot lick or a thing to play or something else to work on. It's just been, I mean, I, I've I'm lucky, and for it's been very rewarding for me, like selfishly, especially it's been, it feels weird because it's so much hardship and so many, and these times we're living in are so, I think transformative, but also really powerful and a bit emotional to live through. Mm-hmm. And so many people that are on, it's just, I get to be in my house and talk to killer musicians. It's a little weird as far as like guilty pleasure. And, but again, that's why we really try to make a difference and try to raise some money and some awareness for some causes that we think are worthwhile in these times.
I love stuff that are so DIY. Like obviously, like this podcast is DIY, especially, you know, thinking about COVID. Well, I mean, the reason that I started this was like, I wanted to come out of this quarantine having made something, but I was so paralyzed by like, that thing has to be amazing and it has to look amazing. And it, you know, needs to meet my advertising standards, you know, yep. But you know, and I think that like we have a lot of that in common with, you know, what you're doing is, you know, you're like, I just want to get it. The idea is what matters. The idea is that you are, you know, you're learning from these amazing artists. They're basically giving a free guitar lesson to anybody who wants to tune in and watch, which is amazing, you know?
Yeah. And for people that you wouldn't normally get to like, and I love it too. It's like, it's almost like a storyteller's, but with a lesson behind it in a way, like, cause we usually will talk about the little story behind the song or a little. And so,
it's like an in-depth, more in-depth song exploder, but like personal, it just feels like it's a lot more personal.
Yeah. And the ego of mine, which is large, but I'm trying to kill it. It was like one of those things where it just consumed me. I was like, how am I going to do it? I got to do it. But then it felt weird. We had lots of layoffs at GSC&M and a lot of really very close partners, lifelong friends of mine who had to be furloughed and like then doing something like this that feels somewhat celebratory or almost indulgent, almost felt like insensitive. And so a couple of those people, I told them, I said, hey, I just want to, I'm doing this thing and I wanted to tell you that I hope it doesn't offend you or you think I'm thinking everything's all right. I know everything's not all right, but I'm also trying to, like you said, I want to be through this time. And like, what did you do? I think I'm going to tell people I have the hillbilly dial on my accent and actions is large. And so I can say like, I love the fact because my youngest son is very contrarian. I love to say, I started a TV show. It's not a TV show, Dad. It's on Instagram. Like, it's a TV show you get to watch on your telephone. I mean, I don't know what the fuck it is, but I found it rewarding and there's a little bit of hustle to it. And I think I'm learning some things. I love that type of learning where there's probably a really much more intelligent descriptor of it, but when you learn things without knowing you're learning them, that's when they can be really powerful because you don't feel like you're not learning them the hard way. And sometimes learning things the easy way, even though it's sort of this circuitous sort of path and I don't really know what I'm doing, I'm making mistakes and I'm okay with it, to your point.
Yeah. I mean, it's the experience of making something and putting it out into the world and sharing that energy with other people. I don't know why I said energy. I think I had.
I believe in it. I believe it. Yeah. So I think there's definitely a spirit to it, and there's an energy to it, and it's trying to. I mean, it's easy. It's very easy. I feel to. If you wanted to sit in your house, which no one wants to sit in, but like you know, crawl under the, put your head in the sand, and stand down about everything. That's. I mean. There's just a lot out there. There's heavy days. We've been through some heavy days and I'm sure there's even more heavy days ahead, but it does give me a little bit of, it feels like a little bit of a new business pitch for me. There's a little bit of, okay, have I prepared my notes and what songs are you going to talk about? Make sure you talk about this. And so I feel it's been good. I'm trying to use it even as a way for presentation skills and thinking about how can I present this without rambling. There's something about, don't know if you found this, but I think just Zoom calls in general, because you can't be there to really either read body language or other things. People, I find myself just fucking rambling on more than I would ever do it in real life. And yeah. I ramble in real life. It's more egregious over this, in this device or through this system.
It's empty space. I think for some reason, empty space is amplified when you're talking through Zoom or Google Chat or some kind of medium like this.
For sure.
And people are just really, really uncomfortable. At least I'm uncomfortable with it, you know, in those moments.
Yeah. And I think it's also, I feel like you can't really, it's distracting. I'm looking at you, but I'm looking up at the green light and I'm seeing myself. And so I'm talking.
Yeah.
But so I'm not really looking at you. So I can't really pick up on these cues, these sort of nonverbal cues of like, shut the fuck up kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a rambler too, man. And that's like the affliction of a writer, I think. In some cases, I think it's like you're either a writer who talks a lot and rambles or a writer who barely says anything and just puts it on paper, I suppose.
Yeah.
So do you think that you would have made this thing had COVID not been been a thing?
No fucking way.
Do you have intentions to kind of keep it going? Like past?
Yep. I'm going to sort of wrap it. I'm going to do 10 episodes of season one, and I'm going to shut it down for like the dog days of summer, and then see what things happen as far as if we're still in this world of no shows and, you know, working from home the majority of the time, then I'll probably come back in the fall with season two. Mm-hmm. But I want to don't tell the production department in there, but they may be out of a job. And I think I might go for some help with some of my, either the production arm at GSC&M to help me a little bit, and, or I may even think about going to a offsite to a different place, or just thinking of different ways to either to build the audience and get more people interested and involved with it, whether it's like, you know, going to different properties to have the lesson, or are we able to then do the lesson and film it in person? So it's just one, so it's still the live stream, but we do it like almost on a set kind of thing. And then we can maybe spend more time and won't be quite as awkward. And sometimes it's awkward because the Instagram flips the image, so it looks like we're playing left-handed. So there's a little bit of weirdness with some of that. So working through that. So yeah, but I'm all thinking too, like, to go ahead and sort of line up that season two with some sort of, it could provide some provocative material as we head into an election year, or
we are in an election year.
But some people that I have in mind for possible guests that sort of that could swing, you know, maybe have certain songs that play more politically, but we can still show them and talk about them and really sort of break them down from a lyrically and also just how to play them.
Yeah. So my last question is, if there's one person that you would bring on, I was going to say dead or alive, but let's say alive. Who's the one person that you would just die to have?
Oh God. I can only get one.
I mean, okay, you can pick three. How about that?
Okay, I'd love to have Bob Dylan on.
Yeah, new album out tomorrow.
Dude, I'm the aforementioned Ryan and I are trying to figure out, we're either going to see what the boss lady says as far as, I'm either going tonight to listen to it or in the morning. We're going to figure out. So we're going to have like a socially distant listening party. I can't believe, so Bob Dylan, but he ain't coming on my show.
I have Boots of Spanish Leather lyrics on my arm.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, that, so does Jason Isbell.
Yeah, it's inspired by that. Because I'm a big Jason Isbell fan, too.
Are you?
Yeah, yeah.
I have a story I'll tell you offline about Jason. Jason would be – I think – I love Jason, but if I could have Bob Dylan – I think I'd like to have Willie. I would do Willie, you know, have Bob Dylan, Willie Nelson, and – like Jeff Tweedy, if I could have those three, right? I mean, it would be easy for me to, there's a lot. I mean, those would be the three, but if you said, who are the five? I could name five and so on. There's so many people I know, but you never know. Like
let's make it happen. If anybody is listening to this and knows Bob Dylan,
yes.
Send them our way.
That would be amazing. Are you kidding me?
To like the 100 people that listen to this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey man, I'll, when it does happen and it's season three, then I'll call you back and
yeah,
we can do this again.
For sure. I'd be happy to do it.
All right, man. Thank you so much. I love what you're doing. And I think I love it that it's for charity, and it's super inspiring. So really appreciate it. And thank you for taking the time, man.
Hey, best of luck to you. Hope you have a nice summer, and thanks again for having me on.
All right. Thanks. Just want to say thanks to Bill. Again, check out Teach That Guy a Lesson at Bain 16th State on Instagram this week with Beach Slang. I also want to give a shout out to Collings Guitars. It's just really cool that you guys are helping him out with that project and supplying him with guitars. So just want to give them a shout out. And thanks to everybody who listens to this podcast. If you're in advertising in any way possible, like if you're a strategist or an account person, I know the title is Creatives in Quarantine, but hey, we're all creative in our own way. So if you're doing something interesting on the side, anything that is just keeping you sane while we're kind of dealing with the wild world right now, drop me an email at aaroncathy808@gmail.com. That's aaroncathy808@gmail.com. All right, catch you on the next one. Okay, thanks. Bye.